Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galati along with Chris Bucanani. Chris, how are we doing this week?
I'm doing very well, Jim. I'm enjoying the Olympics. Are you an Olympics guy?
I haven't been for a while. It just feels like every time I turn it on, Chris, you get some of these touchy-feely reports instead of the actual sport going on.
Yeah, so you're not a Tom Rinaldi fan is what you're telling me.
Yeah, essentially that's what I'm telling you. I turned it on this weekend, and I got Steven Spielberg telling us that there are stories here. Thank you, Steven Spielberg. I would never have guessed that, because for the next 2 weeks, that's all I'm going to get is stories from NBC. And maybe I'm just not, you know, my timing is bad every time I turn it on, but that's the kind of stuff I get. And then they go to commercial and I just get frustrated.
Let me spin this into an unrelated football anecdote, Jim. This is how we'll pivot into college football for the day. But I'm going to play off the Steven Spielberg story you just told. You know, when you walk into Walmart, I don't think they have them anymore, but for years they used to have the kind of old semi-retired guy whose only job was to just greet you and say, welcome to Walmart.
At my Walmart, they still have that.
Okay. All right. Great. So the Walmart greeter, that is a job where you're retired. You just want to go in, work a few hours. You don't want to do a lot of work and you just want to make a little more money, right? The Walmart greeter job. So my friend, the late, great Jason Waltz, God bless him, came up with this wonderful concept of the Walmart greeter coaching gig, which is where you have a guy who has coached in a couple of jobs. He's pretty much established his resume, doesn't really want to stop working altogether, but he doesn't want to work very hard. So he just takes a job and half-asses it and collects the checks. That's a Walmart greeter job. Perfect example. Lovie Smith at Illinois. Okay. 100% Walmart greeter gig. Like everybody, I guarantee you, we have all college football fans in our audience. They can think of somebody who took a Walmart greeter gig recently or in the past, like Howard Schnellenberger at like whatever FAU or FIU, whatever. That's another great Walmart greeter gig.
Or what Lee Corso has been doing for the last 20 years.
Yeah, fair. Right. So I have kind of started to wonder if Steven Spielberg is not into the Walmart greeter phase of his directing career. Like, kind of seems like the guy's coasting on fumes, which is 100% has earned the right to do, right? But, you know, when you're Steven Spielberg and you're telling the world that there are stories when it comes to Olympic athletes, like, you're mailing that in.
Yes, yes. And Jim has to suffer through it, okay? So it's also the whole Olympic coverage when I did see just a couple minutes of men's gymnastics. Okay. And why? Because that's what was on when I turned on the TV. Okay, Chris. Yeah. And I think the guy's parents got more camera time than the performer did. They had him mic'd up. Oh, here's the other thing. They had a heart monitor on one of the moms.
Yeah, that's kind of silly.
Yeah. Her heart rate went up when her son was performing.
Well, anyway, I've had better luck. I've been enjoying it so far. I like Olympic times. And the good news for you, Jim, is it's only going to last a couple of weeks.
Yes, and there's still Netflix. All right. Let's get to our job, which is talking Penn State football. And Chris, here's what I wanted to hit you with today. You know, you and I, along with the other guys on the show, we've talked quite a bit about the changes going on in college football, which it's just incredible. I mean, any one of these would be a major, major change in college football, but we've got all of them happening in 1 year. The realignment, the no divisions, the randomness of schedules, I'll call it, the no division, so you have the two top teams in the league playing for the championship. You have the expanded playoffs. You have the potential for a home playoff game. There's like 1,000 things going on that are changes. And we have, as I said, we have discussed some of them, but I want to go through these one by one and talk about the effect that they have on Penn State and the Penn State fan base.
Sure.
Because we're part of this also. And, you know, it kind of strikes me that you can see it. Now, Penn State recruiting this year, I think, has really been affected by NIL. Now, they had a great weekend for the 2026 recruiting
season.
But, you know, is that a response to what happened in 25? Or is 25 just a hiccup, a natural hiccup? So I think there's a lot to discuss with that.
Still has to settle on the 2025 class, but it is still currently ranked in the top 10. I know everybody feels some kind of way about us not landing 8 of the top 10 in Pennsylvania. And again, stay tuned. Kids flip their commitments. I don't even know if that number is going to be the same till we get to either one of the national signing days, but it's not going to be great. The picture in Pennsylvania is not going to be pretty this year, but we still could finish with, you know, like a top 10, top 12 class, depending on how things go. So let's not act like the sky is falling here.
Sorry, too late, Chris. Now, I'm normally the type with recruiting, like, don't panic, don't overreact, even like a down year could happen. My concern with this season's recruiting class is that it feels like several of their A candidates went elsewhere, guys that you would expect them to get.
Yeah, it was a bad cycle. There's no question. But if your bad cycle is we're in the top 10 as we come into the fall, like, that's maybe a good problem to have as a program.
Well, and I know there are different services, but the one that I'm looking at, and I think it matches the numbers, has them like down to like 16th now.
Maroon.
In this, and even when they were, Chris, in the top 10, if you look at the average ranking of their players, quality, not quantity, they were never in the top 10 or even top 15. So
it was all volume is what you're saying.
Yes. Yeah. And again, people will say to me, Jim, you're being so critical of these kids, not giving them a chance. Whoa. That's not the case. There may be some great recruits in here. Absolutely great. But you can't tell me that they're not missing out on guys that they really wanted and really expected to get. And that number, you know, the top 8 in Pennsylvania, I'm sure that's not what they expected. And Chris, if you look at an individual player and say, well, this guy, he went elsewhere because it was about playing time. I get that. That happens. That's why, you know, I don't expect them to get 8 out of 8 of the top Pennsylvania players. But I also don't expect 0 out of 8. I also don't expect them to lose one of those guys to South Carolina. I also don't expect them to lose the top quarterback in the state of Pennsylvania in who knows how many years to Missouri. Okay. I don't typically expect that. And my sense is that it's probably an NIL issue.
Yeah, okay? I think that's probably right. Yeah.
And because of that, the question to me becomes, can they respond to that? Now, is this past weekend and what they did in the 26th recruiting class, and as you said, the potential to flip a couple top guys to Penn State in this current class, if they do that and accomplish that, Chris, I'm not only going to be happy that they did that, I'm going to be happy that it appears they said, uh-oh, we've got a problem here that we need to address and fix. And they did.
Yeah, I think in general, Penn State is trending up, believe it or not, in the NIL space. Now, it can be said that under the leadership of Sandy Barber, we started ourselves in so deep in a hole that we dug for ourselves, that trending up means that we might only be like finally able to stick our heads up above the ground level, but which would you rather have, right? You know, Joe Paterno said you're either getting better or you're getting worse. And I know which one I'd rather choose every time, especially when it comes to Penn State's NIL. I do think also, Jim, that, you know, contrary to what you would read on Twitter, Penn State's issues with NIL are not going to be solved by folks like you and me giving $50 to the NIL fund. It's going to be solved by donors, be they alumni, fans, businesses, or combination of the three, with the capacity to stroke large checks that have numerous zeros, 5, 6, and 7 zeros, okay? And there's nothing like, especially for the folks who are making this as an emotional investment, which is the source of most of this NIL money. Let's be honest. This is not businesses saying like, oh, we're going to get great ROI from investing on so-and-so to endorse our product. This is donors giving money to collectives. There's nothing like publicly getting embarrassed and having your butt kicked and your lunch eaten to finally get some of those dollars off the sidelines. So it may turn out that when we write, Steven Spielberg comes in and says, oh, hey, there's stories here. We write the grand narrative of Penn State football entering the NIL era, that losing all of these Pennsylvania commits in this recruiting cycle turns out to have been a blessing in disguise, because that's finally the ammo that Pat Kraft et al. Needed to go to these deep-pocketed donors and say, look at what's happening, guys. The world is shifting underneath our feet. And if you don't come off the sidelines and you don't open up your pocketbooks, what has been Penn State football is going to enter a period of decline. So if that's what it took to jolt the Penn State universe into attentiveness, I'm going to call it a win. And to your point about those guys going to South Carolina and Missouri and all over the place, I would much rather lose top recruits to Timbuktu than lose them to Notre Dame or to in-conference rivals.
State. Yeah. And yes, you're absolutely correct. And I hope you're right, because and I think it is. And NIL, it's not public, so we don't know the dollars and cents going where and what needs to be done to match some of those offerings. But we have to fill in the blanks and look at the evidence. And it looks like James Franklin and company said, uh-oh, we got burned here, and they are reacting to it. So there's a couple of those eight players that are at the top of the Pennsylvania list who are still talking to Penn State. So yeah.
Turn those lemons into lemonade, baby.
Yes, you see that happen, and I think we could comfortably say, hey, yeah, they have reacted to it in a positive way and made things happen. So, all right, Chris, that's going to be it for quarter number one. I'm going to follow up on that NIL question with you with the news that the agreement with the NCAA seems to be going through when we come back.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, general manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim, he's Chris. It's quarter number two. And Chris, I'm going to sidetrack us for a second here, if you don't mind.
More than I did with the Walmart greeter story last segment. Okay.
Well, this is at least semi-related. Well, it is related to Penn State football. But as every one of our listeners, I'm sure, knows, we have an Ask T. Frank segment and an Ask Andy segment, which allows our listeners to send questions in. I just want to share with you a question that came in while we were on break and get your reaction to it. And like sure. I said, it's totally off the topic we had. And the question comes from Joe from Scranton. I don't think it's that Joe, by the way. But he says, can you tell me why you, Andy, along with Jim, believe that we're out of the playoffs if we lose to West Virginia? First, I believe we have a distinct advantage in talent. We don't give up any plays. West Virginia isn't explosive. Jim and you are the most pessimistic view of the team. Now, here's what's fascinating to me, Chris. I said, losing to West Virginia could be an elimination from the playoffs. If we assume they're going to lose to Ohio State, you have a loss to a Big 12 team on your resume. Not going to look good. That's going to hit your tiebreaker. I did not say I think they're going to lose to West Virginia. I didn't say that. It's if they lose. These were the repercussions. So, Joe, if you're listening today, there's my answer to you. But we'll hit you again later this week when we talk to Andy. All right, Chris, let's get back to our topic, which was the changes in college football and how they affect Penn State. I didn't mean to start with NIL, but we kind of went down that path. And I think we're both of the, feeling good about what went down over the weekend, which was very good for the class of 26, a couple more class of 25 guys who might reconsider. But, Chris, it leads to this. They apparently are closer to a settlement in this House versus NCAA lawsuit, putting together the agreement. And two things are going to be part of this agreement, and I want to ask if you think that's a positive or negative for Penn State. One of them is that the universities themselves are going to be allowed to distribute approximately $22 million directly to the student athletes. And the other one, apparently they are actually going to try to enforce real NIL, meaning a donor just, here's $1 million, kid, for no apparent business reason, isn't going to fly. That any deal above $600 is going to be reviewed. Are those things that are going to help Penn State? And also, is that review process actually going to be effective and cause any changes?
Sure. I'll take them in order. Yes, I think the revenue sharing is a big plus for Penn State, because Penn State is one of a very small number of athletic departments across the country with the capacity to max out that $22 million every year and not even really feel the pain of it, Jim. We can shift some things around, and as a self-sufficient athletics department, we can pay the max amount allowed to our players. So I think it's great for the players. I think it's great for Penn State. As I was actually discussing with your colleague, Landon Tengwall, on Twitter, I think that all of this is still ultimately going to result in the need for a collective bargaining process. And as Landon commented, probably some kind of a college football players association. And that feeds into the second part of your question, which is this quote unquote cap on NIL earnings, like contracts over $600 are going to need to be reviewed. This is very typical NCAA. Like, they let this thing get completely out of control, and now they think they can put the toothpaste back in the tube. And you know what the saying says about putting the toothpaste back in. Like, no, it's not. I don't even think it's ever going to see the light of day in terms of an attempt at implementation, because I think it is so glaringly illegal on so many different levels that, number one, it's going to go immediately into court. And number two, probably, as is usually the case with the NCAA these days, they're going to get their butts kicked all over the courtroom when it does. So look, in a perfect world where that was implemented, and frankly, I think it's bad. I think it's a bad idea. I think it's a bad process. And it's also against the law, but even if it weren't, I wouldn't be in favor of it, really. Yeah, that would be great for Penn State, because as we just discussed, we're one of the programs that struggles to raise the kind of NIL money that, you know, you have Ohio State's athletic director talking about $20 million worth of de facto payroll to their athletes. That's tough. That's tough for Penn State to do, because that's before the revenue sharing kicks in. Which means, like, in the situation that they had last year, maybe they wouldn't get quite as much money, but they would hit that $22 million at Ohio State and then, you know, have another $10, $15, or $20 million to play with. So you're talking about $40 million of de facto salary going to their players. So, yeah, it would be good for Penn State, but don't get excited, because I don't think it's ever going to be implemented. And personally, I don't think that it should.
Well, we're actually going to spend an entire show with Landon talking about that topic, Chris. And depending on when you're listening to this, it's either been posted or will
maybe
be
you already heard
shortly.
It.
Yeah. You may have already heard it. But, you know, a couple thoughts on it is that NCAA, they are begging the federal government to step in and help them out here. Okay. And I think that's what they're going to require.
And well, I've got bad news for the NCAA, because if the latest presidential election polls are to be believed, the federal government may end up stepping in, but not in the way they're hoping at all. It's not going to be Congress. It's going to be the NLRB, and they're not going to be happy with the outcome.
Well, there will. I do believe that there will be collective bargaining happening here eventually, and that's when that's the way you establish these things. And I don't know if
I think that's going to be a challenge. I mean, if you look at the difficulty that the NFL has getting its players union aligned, and you're talking about 32 clubs with, you know, 53 man rosters plus practice squad. Now think about, even if we narrow it down to not include all of the schools that are currently part of the FBS, we split FBS again into two divisions. You're talking about a much bigger group of guys. You look at, you got a hint of it maybe with the NCAA football game, where the high earners were kind of pitted against the rank and file guys. They were going to get $600 and a free copy of the game. And we were supposed to poo-poo that as like, well, you know, they're not getting good value. For the vast majority of guys who would be part of a college football players association, that $600 might represent, you know, most of, or maybe the only NIL money they're going to earn all year. And that's always the strategy of management versus labor. When you see it in pro football, they try to leverage the lunch pail guys who are living more paycheck to paycheck versus the top end, the quarterbacks who are earning these, you know, $200 million contracts. So that, there's going to be challenges there for the players from a cat herding perspective. But, you know, it goes back to the lesson that we have been painfully learning in college sports since the turn of the century, which is, if the leadership would just sit down and be realistic about the way the winds are blowing and the fact that they're going to have to compensate the players, and just try to take a more honest view of the world as it is rather than how they wish it would be, and approach it with that kind of attitude, we would maybe get to a workable solution faster. But going back to what you asked about with the House settlement and this idea that we're going to try to cap NIL payments to say above $600, you've got to pass some arbitrary test of being true NIL and matching some imaginary concept of market value, that shows to me that they're still living in fantasy land, and the ultimate product is probably going to be worse because we don't have our best minds acting in good faith trying to get to a solution before one is forced on us by a government bureaucracy.
Well, Chris, I do think, well, first of all, if they had just proactively a decade ago said, hey, we're going to start giving players some money,
100%,
it would have not gotten this far. And I think this is a little late, but I don't want to say too little. It'll be interesting to see. And I don't feel like doing the math right now, but if you've got $22 million to distribute among the student athletes, are you creating a situation where there's enough assistance to teams, not just Penn State, but all the teams that aren't, you know, the big time Southeast Conference schools, the Ohio States. And it's like, okay, I want to go to Penn State, but boy, you know, you're talking, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars over here, and over here, $600. If it's, hey, I'm getting $50,000, $100,000, that's enough for me to go to the school I really want to go to. And I think there's also the part, the superstars, the really huge names, they could use NIL legitimately how it was intended. You know, if you're Caleb Williams, you're a big name, Nissan and the Heisman House will come to you, okay? Sure. And you're going to make that kind of money. The problem is, if you're, you know, a 4 or 5-star right guard, you know, what kind of, you don't have the name recognition, but, you know, the, at least that distribution of $22 million means you will get money even if you're at Penn State. And I think you mentioned often Michigan being kind of in the same boat as Penn State with NIL. There's another example, big time program. They could afford to put out the 20 some million dollars, and Ohio State is still going to have, like you said, they had an additional $20 million in NIL. Does it essentially mean Ohio State's going to go from putting out $20 million to putting out $40 million? Probably. You know, that's what's going to happen. but at least you have the other schools able to put a decent amount of money out there, Chris.
Yeah, and so to your point about Caleb Williams and you know, the market resetting itself to function more like how they imagined NIL was going to work, I think that's a really important one. Once everybody is getting some money, right, then at least if you are going to contribute to support a school's NIL efforts, you understand that it's going to try to get the best players. And look, that's the reason why those guys are worth money, right? Their talent imbues them with that value that allows them to command higher sums of money. And I think one of the other things that needs to happen, and this is the direction that it's going, is that that comes in-house and is managed by the school. Like if I give money to Penn State right now and I say, this money is for the library, I know there's a whole structure in charge of making sure that money doesn't get spent on, you know, a chemistry lab. It gets spent on the library. Well, the same thing, I want to have the confidence to say, hey, here's some money to go out and get that right guard. I want to know there's somebody who's answerable to Pat Kraft who's going to make sure my money is spent the way it was intended. So that, I think that's important too.
And that's all part of the big changes. And this might be the first time someone referred to, I want to make sure money doesn't go to a chemistry lab. Puts it in that kind of negative context. All right. That is it for quarter number two. We're going to get to some of the other changes in college football when we come back.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, general manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Chris Buccanani. I'm Jim Galanti. We're talking about some of the changes in college football and how they affect Penn State directly. And somehow, Chris, pretty typical. We got off on our NIL tangent. I want to bring it back in, I took notes, okay? I did some preparation work. I want that to pay off. So let's get to some of these other topics, some of these other changes going on. And let's start with realignment. Boy, what a change. You had Oklahoma, Texas to the Southeast Conference, you know, the four West Coast teams coming to the Big Ten. Not to mention the changes in the ACC where they got Cal, Stanford, SMU. So, all right, what is the direct effect on this realignment for Penn State?
Well, I think there are a number, right? So when we just talk about a very practical matter, it's going to increase the travel burden for Penn State. On an annual basis. And that hits the dollars and cents, by the way, back to the conversation from the last segment. But I think probably more interesting to me and most fans is just the logistics of how that impacts the team's preparation for certain games. You know, the fact that they are going to have to make that cross-country flight out to California to play USC in the heart of the season this year, you really have to be intentional about, okay, how is that going to work? If you think about for years, maybe every once in a while, you'd have an intersectional game at the beginning of the year that allowed you to prep for that kind of travel. Like when we went to Ireland to open the 2014 season, that was a good example. Franklin talked a lot about how all the logistics increased. Well, now that's going to become a regular feature of your conference schedule. And when you're really into the meat of it in October, you're going to have to think about, are we prepped to go fly across the country and play at Oregon, at Washington, at USC? I do think that's an issue, and it works the other way, too. Penn State is going to host Washington and UCLA. And so, you know, you may be ostensibly going to get some benefit of that cross-country travel as well. I know that gets talked about a lot in the NFL. Bettors love to look at the data of, you know, how often do the West Coast teams lose when they have to go across country to the East Coast. So I think about that. I think about the entertainment value of being able to bring some big brands in who we've not seen Penn State play often or ever. And the fact that, you know, this season, things did not work out great in terms of the whiteout logistics. You can't get that for the Ohio State game, but we still get to host a team that we have not seen Penn State play very often. I'm not sure that the Huskies have come to Beaver Stadium ever, maybe once at the most, but off the top of my head, I'm saying I don't think it's ever happened. And they're the team that played the national championship game last year. And I understand that it's not going to be the same caliber of team that Kalen DeBoer had to end last season. But yeah, I think that's big too. You know, you talked about, you took your notes. I'm going to give the ball back to you, Jim.
Well, I think I didn't have in my notes the travel, which is an excellent point. But I also think for Penn State to overplay, and I know that James Franklin was real quick to bring it up. And he brought it up almost within the context of, like, they're the only team who has to deal with it. It's the West Coast teams, for them, it's a real issue. I mean, they've got to do that. Even when they're not going coast to coast, just going to the Midwest, it's a pretty big deal for them. And I don't have it right in front of me, but I had somewhere the Big Ten travel, the number of miles that the schools have to go through. And like UCLA, Washington, Oregon, those teams, it's way above the rest of the conference. Now, Penn State, compared to the rest of the conference, because they're on the East Coast as opposed to the Midwest, it makes that one West Coast trip a very long trip. But I think the effect is much greater on those West Coast teams. I think the natural instinct is to say this makes it tougher to win a Big Ten championship because you have those additional teams. Just mathematics alone will tell you it should be tougher because there's more teams you're competing with. But what I wonder, you're a longtime Penn State fan, and one of the things that when Penn State first joined the Big Ten, the question was, after being an independent for so long, it felt like conference teams were more concerned about winning the Big Ten championship than they were about winning national championships.
Yeah.
So my question now is, with the expanded playoff, as Penn State fans, how important is a conference championship, or is making the playoffs the real standard now that it's expanded?
Oh, I think for sure it's making the playoffs. And what you and I have talked about before, and I'm very intrigued to watch play out over the next few years, is how significant conference championship games continue to be. I do wonder, this is something that I've thought about and talked about, and I heard Josh Pate, who does a great college football show on YouTube, he's been talking about it a lot recently. I think you and I even touched on it on the show. Are teams that participate in conference championship games and lose going to be penalized for having an additional loss? So are you better off almost to skate and not play in the conference championship game than be one of the best teams in the regular season to qualify to participate and lose? So that's going to be a question. If that starts to happen, especially if it happens to an SEC school, Jim, where an SEC school eats an additional loss for being in the SEC championship game and then gets leapfrogged by a school from another conference in the playoff seedings, I think you'll start to hear some questions about, is there a better way to make the revenue we're currently making from conference championship games? So I think that's going to be a question. How much penalty, if at all, do you experience if you lose the conference championship game? And then the other question is, what is the benefit of a bye versus hosting a first-round game? So if it turns out that some of these teams that miss the week because they won a conference title and then they get the bye, they lose and before they get to the championship game or at least to the semifinals, I think you're going to start seeing people put less and less emphasis on participating in the conference championship game. Now, right now, I think there are a lot of Penn State fans who are amped about the idea of a playoff game in Beaver Stadium. So it's not the end of the world if they don't win a conference title. So I think even as we sit here today, the emphasis on conference championship is probably starting to recede. But we'll see. We need a few years of data on that first.
For the benefit of the team, there really is almost no benefit to having a conference championship game. It's about the money. That's the only reason to have a conference championship game.
I've always thought football conference championship games are kind of dumb when you interrogate the reasons why we're doing them. And it now seems like it's possible that there are going to be practical negative consequences for the teams that play in these games. And if that starts to happen, I'm telling you, there are going to be other ways to make that money, whether it's a combination of preseason showcases and expanding the playoffs or something. I don't know that we're still going to be doing these things 5 or 10 years from now.
Well, Chris, also this conference championship game, I've been hearing a lot of college football talk that you can't penalize that team for losing the conference championship game. Really? Why not? Think about this. Let me give you this example. Southeast Conference plays 8 conference games. The Big Ten plays 9. It'd be like me saying, oh, you can't penalize Penn State for one of those losses because that's their 9th conference game when the Southeast Conference is only playing 8. It's the same analogy here. Those two teams just happen to be playing one more conference game. You showed up and you lost, okay? You are no longer, 11-1. You are now 11-2. You played the game and you lost it, Chris. You can't ignore that game, which is it's a popular talking point now. So
I guess,
but you can take away
from it. Also feels like it disincentivizes having a good regular season. Like if you're rewarded for being less well regarded during the regular season, so you can just sit on the sidelines and not get your uniforms muddy and benefit from that, I don't know that that's healthy for the sport.
Well, if Oregon and Ohio State finish the season 11-1 and each with a conference loss and they play in the conference championship game and Penn State is 10-2, I am not going to put Penn State into the playoffs above the loser of the Ohio State-Oregon conference championship game, okay? That loser, let's say Oregon loses that game and they're now 11-2, and it's not so much about, oh, they won 11 games versus Penn State's 10. It's going to be that they are, they finished better than Penn State during the conference. They still have only 2 losses each. Tiebreaker, I'm going to give it to Oregon, the better team during the regular season. However, let's look at another scenario. And I know we've talked about this, and I've been harping on the disparities in schedule when there's a certain randomness.
Yeah.
Iowa has 1 game against the 4 best teams in the conference.
Complete clown schedule. Yeah.
Iowa can be favored in 11 of their 12 games. Iowa could finish the season 11-1. And depending on how they do tiebreakers or just, by their record, could be in the conference championship game. And I swear that Ohio State or Oregon will really expose Iowa as a fraud. Okay.
you think that might happen? Is there some precedent for that occurring recently?
We call this deja vu all over again. Iowa going to a championship game and having their butt handed to them, Chris. All right. Is that going to be relevant? Yes or no?
Well, obviously, right. Yeah. I mean, you touched on another really, really important point, Jim. And it could happen this year. We've talked about it, especially in the SEC. You could have a gaggle of teams with identical records. But once you scratch beneath the surface and you start looking at the strength of their respective schedules, you're going to see big disparities. I think you're the one who says the committee's going to have to actually do some work in all likelihood.
That's exactly it. But the point, maybe Iowa is an extreme point, but it's not out of the realm of possibility, Chris. Okay. It could happen. So the conference championship game is a data point. It's a talking point. It's got to be taken into consideration. However, what it does is creates the scenario, Ohio State, Oregon, Penn State all finish the season with 1 conference loss. And for the world, I cannot find what the tiebreaker is going to be, Chris. I don't know if it's even official yet how they're going to do a tiebreaker. But if I'm 11-1 Penn State and I lose the tiebreaker, I know it's typical of a Penn State fan to cry about it. I won't. I'm going to take my 11-1 record, go right into the playoffs and be a happy camper. All right, Chris, I'll let you respond to that when we come back in quarter number four.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, general manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Chris. I'm Jim. When we finished up quarter number three, Chris, I was adamantly making a point about the conference championship games, and it has to be taken into consideration, but in a tiebreaker, I would not be brokenhearted if my team didn't make the conference championship game, which assured them of making the college football playoffs.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. So how does this affect Penn State? Let's just deal with one hypothetical that is not in any way out of the realm of possibility. You could definitely see this happening, and it would speak to everything you just discussed, including who gets into the Big Ten championship game, which, if I'm not mistaken, is they're just going to take the top two ranked teams in the conference will play in the conference title game, which, again,
by top two top ranked, you're talking about by the college football playoff committee.
By the playoff committee, which is why there's going to be more scrutiny and pressure on that committee than ever before, and why we should live stream all of their meetings so we can actually see how the sausage gets made. Let's say, Jim, that Ohio State runs the table. Okay, so they're 12-0. They're guaranteed a spot in the Big Ten title game. And then both Penn State and Oregon only have one loss. And for both of them, it is 2-12-0 Ohio State. So now let me just put it to you. If that plays out that way, which of the two teams would you expect to have been ranked higher at the end of the season?
Off the top of my head, I'm going to say Oregon, because they're going to start higher than Penn State. So I would assume they wouldn't drop as much. And I'm trying to think. I do have I should find the Big Ten schedule here somewhere and take a look at strength of schedules. I just brought it up. Now, Oregon also has Michigan and Washington on their schedule, and Wisconsin, where Penn State has obviously USC and Washington. I think probably in comparison, I would say based on strength of schedule, I would also say Oregon, right?
Right, yeah. So their non-conference schedule is Idaho, Boise State, and Oregon State. Now, right out of the gate, it is very possible that Oregon might be the only loss of the season for Boise State. Like, Boise is considered one of the two or three group of five teams who is most favored to take that guaranteed group of five slot in the playoffs. So they could have another playoff team on their resume at the end of the season. So we'll have to see how things would play out for Boise State. But yeah, really, they play mostly the same teams that Penn State does, except you swap out a road game at USC for Penn State with a road game at Michigan for Oregon. Now, I think just based on our preseason expectations, we would give the edge to winning at Michigan versus winning at USC in all likelihood. And so if you're comparing two schedules that are very similar, if you're putting, okay, you were home versus Boise State, Penn State, you won at West Virginia to open the season, very, very similar resumes. It's really probably in that scenario would come down to what kind of a year Michigan had versus what kind of a year USC had. And as you mentioned, Jim, Oregon getting the bump that they started the season ranked higher than Penn State was. So you would probably see an Ohio State-Oregon Big Ten championship game. But is this not an example of what we just talked about? Would it maybe actually be better for Penn State to just sit back and say, hey, let's see if Ohio State can rough up the Ducks a second time And then given the fact that our resumes were so close, you were splitting hairs to decide who was going to be the other participant in the conference championship game. If they can't get it done, maybe Penn State benefits from that. We keep our beautiful white road unis clean by not playing and end up with the fifth seed in the playoffs, which means we're hosting Boise or whomever comes out of the group five in the first round of the playoffs. And then if we win that one, we are facing the, in all likelihood, the Big 12 champion in the second round. So an 11-1 season for Penn State could end up being very, very advantageous because we could get the best road of any non-bye team and arguably any team maybe into the playoffs and not even have to be in a conference championship game.
Chris, I really appreciate you playing chess instead of checkers there. Not only is it would I be saying, you know what, Oregon, you take that conference championship game.
Right.
We'll settle in. And that number five seed is exactly where you want to be. All right.
And that would be a crazy mirror image of the last season for Oregon, where they lost the regular season game to Washington and then fell to them again in the Pac-12 championship game. You could very well see the exact same thing play out. And it might be best overall for Penn State to just be at home watching the whole thing on television.
And Chris, I think what's going to happen here, you know, we're talking about what are the repercussions of all these changes, and Penn State, based on history, will probably be right in the middle of this. There's going to be controversy and in hitting that expanded playoffs. No matter what happens, my prediction is there's going to be chaos. And there's going to be a major issue because you and I both have looked at this Iowa schedule, and it's conceivable they could be 11-1 and be a total and complete fraud.
Yeah, it's okay. Gross. Like, Iowa State could do all of college football a huge favor by finding a way to pull that upset in the rivalry game. That said, I have zero faith in Iowa State, but that really could be the big game.
And, you know, we will emphasize the Big Ten because that's where Penn State is. But, Chris, the Southeast Conference is going to be a total and complete mess at the end of the year.
Yeah. Because if you're looking up schedules, go look at Mizzou.
Exactly. And, you know, I told you the situation where I played it out, where I did the games just by chalk that the higher ranked team would win. And if you play out their season, and I have their schedule in front of me too, the Southeast Conference, you would have seven teams with like zero or one loss. It's crazy. And Texas and Georgia do not play each other. Yes, we get Alabama, Georgia, but that's going to be total chaos with tiebreakers and so on. Another example of why those conference championship games are going to be so difficult. But it also leads into this whole expanded playoff with a home potential for a home playoff game. Chris, when they first made this announcement and said there was a possibility for a home playoff game, that alone, to me, made the expanded playoff worth it.
Sure.
And I'm thinking in terms of as a Penn State fan and a playoff whiteout, okay, which would be just bonkers, incredible. But forget about, you know, it doesn't have to be at Beaver Stadium. Get a home game at LSU, at Ole Miss, at, you know, at the Horseshoe, at the Big House. I don't care. Those are going to be phenomenal games with phenomenal atmosphere.
Yeah. Yeah. Outson Stadium, too, is an absolute madhouse from what I'm told. I'm looking forward to the day when Penn State gets to go out there as a road team in the regular season. By the way, speaking of which, I did confirm what I thought was true before in the previous segment. Yeah, this trip to Beaver Stadium is going to be the first for Washington. Penn State's 3-0 against them, two bowls, and one trip out there. So, I think you're spot on. And the point about the SEC, man, strength of schedule is going to become a really sticky pain point for that conference this year, I think, especially because, as you referenced before, they're also playing chess and not checkers by constantly talking about how much they think they really need to go to 9 conference games, knowing that they're never going to actually do it. I mean, that's like, why would you give that advantage up unless you were forced to do it? And I referenced Missouri. They're going to have a very, very good football team this year, but they're just not going to play the strength of schedule of some of their other conference brethren. So it may end up in this world where brand equity is so important to the playoff committee that Missouri has one of its best seasons ever and still ends up getting submarined because they look at their schedule and say, hey, look, your wins are just not as impressive as the wins of other SEC teams that have the same record as you.
Let me just point out teams that they are going to miss. They're going to miss Georgia. They're going to miss Texas. They're going to miss LSU. They're going to miss Ole Miss, okay? I just named four out of the top 5 teams in the Southeast Conference. They do play Alabama, but that's it as far as those top teams go. It's crazy. I do want to ask you, though, with this home playoff game, obviously as a fan, I would just love to see that at Beaver Stadium. You live in State College. What would it mean to State College to host a home playoff game?
Oh, well, James talked about this a little bit at Big Ten Media Days, the impact on the host communities of these playoff games. There is probably no school in the Big Ten, and maybe not in the Power Four, that would benefit more from hosting a playoff game than State College. We're not in a big city. The town is called State College. It literally would not exist without Penn State being here. This would be cow pastures or very similar. And we weathered COVID, I think, about as well as you could possibly do, a town that's entirely dependent on revenue from the university students and from the football season. And you take all of that away at a time when the global economy is shut down. Like, I was afraid it was going to be like an existential disaster. And fortunately it was not, but it was not painless either. So to be able to get that kind of a shot in the arm, right heading into the Christmas holiday, Jim, it would be like an economic Christmas miracle for sure for this place. So again, Oregon, you want to go play in Indianapolis? Like, go with God. By all means, you go out there and you play that game, and we'll just hang out here and we'll watch it at Champs Downtown.
What about having a second round at the home stadiums also? Do you think, because there would be 3 rounds of playoffs on the road and perhaps even 4 for some teams, wouldn't it be great to have even that second round played at home?
I think it would be good, and it would not kind of quasi-punish the teams that earned the 4 byes.
I agree with you too, Chris. All right. That is going to be it for our show. A fun show, Chris. And we didn't even hit some of the other changes that are going on in college football. Maybe we'll hit those next week when we come back. That is it. Thanks for listening. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, General Manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.